Blog Talk Radio.
Can't turn the tide. The world looks different when God is on the side. Who gives the future? Do they care why? I know you're tired of trying to listen clearly. You don't have to try. Can't come. We let you fight. Finish fight. And the next one. Too powerful to die. Too young to live. This is the century. The moment of your own.
Say really 3 minutes to the biggest battle of our professional lives all comes down to today. Either we heal as a team or we're going to crumble inch by inch, play by play till we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen, believe me. And we can stay here, get the shit kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell. One inch at a time. Now, I can't do it for you. I'm too old. I look around, I see these young faces, and I think, I mean, I made every wrong choice a middle-aged man can make. I pissed away all my money, believe it or not. I chased off anyone who's ever loved me. And lately, I can't even stand the face I see in the mirror. You know, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. But you only learn that when you start losing stuff. You find out life's just game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the fucking difference between winning and losing. Between and double. In any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that inch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that inch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him. That's a team, gentlemen. And either we heal now as a team or we will die as individuals. That's football, guys. That's all it is. Now, what are you going to do?
Hello, America. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi. Excuse me. Good evening, everyone. This is Lori Picka from Michigan. I hope everyone is well, and we're going to have a great show tonight.
Yes, indeed. We have a big show tonight, Season 6, Episode 40. Democrat Diane Young, she's running for Congress in Michigan's District 10. She'll be with us in the next 5 minutes or so. And, you know, what can we say about this incredible woman? It is said that a woman's place is in the House. We couldn't agree more. So tonight's guest has thrown her hat into the political ring. In a time of political uncertainty and toxicity, we need more women serving in the House of Representatives. Diane L. Young is such a woman, and she's our special guest tonight. And like I said, she's running in November 2024 for Democrats. Hopefully, you know, when she gets a Democratic nomination, because it's a crowded field. But all eyes are on her tonight because she is a financial planner by trade. She's not a career politician. And Michigan lusts for proper representation. She's a candidate who they can identify with. She's a mother, a wife, a down-to-earth next-door neighbor, and a friend. She has been in forefront of women's rights, equal rights, and justice, and who has fought for the downtrodden and underrepresented. She's not a rubber-stamp yes person, and she's always got a job done. So CD10 Michigan would be so much better with her as a congresswoman. So you can visit her website at www.dianeyoungforcongress.com. Again, that website is www.dianeyoungforcongress.com. We're proud to speak to her tonight and take your calls at 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. No speaking over a guest or, you know, me or Lori. So turn off all background noises. As it is distracting, be respectful or call the cutoff. So again, it's www.dianeyoung, that's DianeYoung for Congress, forcongress.com, DianeYoungForCongress.com. So we're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking. Lori, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. I'm excited to have mm-hmm. Diane on the show this evening. I feel like I'm mm-hmm. getting a cold. So mm-hmm. if I sound a little hoarse, that's why.
mm-hmm. Yes, man. Yes, and for those who don't know, that was Vampire Weekend by Capricorn. That was the intro music tonight. So hope you like mm-hmm. it. We'll play a little bit more of it later on. And, you know, District 10 in Michigan, mm-hmm. David Bonnier, he was the minority leader back in the day. He was a congressman for that district for many years. And of course, it's changed up. Last time Carol Malinga ran, and in District 9 next door, we'll have McLean, who, you know, nobody's challenging her. So hopefully that will change yeah. soon. Yes, so I'm excited about this conversation we're going to have with Diane Young, you know, and geez, I hope she gets it because other people out there, like, for example, Christine, what's her name again? She's running for prosecutor, Christine Hines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we hope Christina to have her on the show as well one day, right, Christina mm-hmm. Hines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we need women in positions of power because women are the backbone of the society and everything. And,
that's
you know,
fair.
You want something done, you know, the man will tell you how to do it. But when mm-hmm. you want something done, a woman will just do it, you know. You know, that's a tenacity that women in society have, yeah. And Diane Young is such a person. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Diane Young to the show. Hello, Diane. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Hi, Diane.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? Good. How are you? Thanks for having me, Laurie and David.
Oh, no problem. We're excited to have you on. And what we're going to do is basically just kind of ask you a few questions. I'll ask you the first one, and then David will go next, and we'll go from there. And then if there's some calls or on the line, maybe we'll take that. So we'll just make it kind of a very, you know, just free and easy and, you know, no pressure type of evening. How's that?
Well, that's fine. I'm okay with a little pressure, though, too. That's fine.
Okay. Okay, Diane, so I'm just going to start with the first question. I'm going to ask you, just tell us a little bit about yourself, your childhood, where you grew up, your family, your education, and your hobbies, and why you decided to run for Congress in this red district of MI Michigan 10. And also, in the second part of the question, do you think John James has done a good job as a representative? So we'll let you answer that.
All right. Well, lots to unpack there. I'll try to be as brief as possible. I grew up mainly in Macomb County. I spent the first 12 years in Berkeley, and then we went out to Romeo. My father was a carpenter. He used to work in the building all the big auto shows. As a carpenter, and his dream was to build his own house, so he built it. We bought property out in Romeo, and he built his dream house out there. And so I grew up, spent my teenage years, and graduated from Romeo High School. So I'm a proud Macomb raised gal. Met my husband. I went to Oakland University. I worked at Lakeside Mall. I picked tomatoes on a farm out in Armada. I cleaned houses. I worked at McDonald's. I did all sorts of odd jobs to work my way through college, and I met my husband at Oakland University on the fencing team, of all things. And so I still like to think I solve all my foils and that from fencing. And, you know, my mom was a secretary, so I grew up in a, pretty working-class, blue-collar family. And, you know, I had a great childhood in that. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm running for Congress is the same reason I became a financial planner. I eventually finished college actually out in New York. My husband went to pursue some graduate studies out on Long Island, and I ended up finishing my degrees out there. And I got recruited into the financial services field and became a financial planner. And before I knew it, I was in management. And by the year 2000, I had an office overlooking Times Square. So, you know, this girl that grew up in the boondocks in Romeo, you know, I feel like, wow, I made it. But we came back to Michigan because we wanted to raise our children near their family and their grandparents. And then I eventually, in 2004, started my own financial planning firm and built it into one of the largest woman-owned financial planning firms in the state. And I've been just very active in the community. I've been on the board of the Paint Creek Center for the Arts. I was the treasurer of the Girl Scouts. I was on the board of the Warren Symphony here in Macomb County. Many other organizations. So I have deep roots and deep commitment in this district. So, and the same reasons that I became a financial planner are why I'm running for Congress, because I've seen how the reckless policymaking in Washington trickles down to people trying to save for retirement, trying to pay for their kids' future and all that. And we need to have someone with some common sense there. There is not one financial planner in Congress.
Oh, no.
I know. Out of 435 people, there's not one financial planner, which may be why they can't seem to do a budget. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's very possible.
So, and your question too, like, do I think John James has done a good job? I mean, first off, he's not really from our community at all. He lived out in Farmington Hills when he decided to run here. He couldn't even vote for himself, for goodness sakes. And, you know, he ran for Senate twice before, and then he's like, well, you know, I'll try this seat. I will disagree with you, Lori, that this is a red district. This is really not a red district. I tell people we lost this seat last cycle, not that John James won. He outspent the Democrats here $45 to $6 a vote,
And Gretchen Whitmer won this. You know, and Gretchen Whitmer won this district at the exact same time by nearly 7 points.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and Prop 3, the reproductive freedom proposal last cycle, won by an even bigger margin. So we know a strong woman candidate can win in this district. Mm-hmm. And as far as, you know, John James, I mean, his priorities have not been in line with the district, and he's really into the theatrics of, you know, over policy making. And, you know, we've seen their time wasting, how many times they tried to elect a speaker and do this and that. Mm-hmm. And they're not even, they still haven't even passed a budget. The budget was due 6 months ago, and they still haven't passed it. It's almost time for the next year's budget. So,
it is.
No, I don't think he's done a good job.
Yeah, I hear you, and I believe you, absolutely.
Yes. And, you know, John James is a carpetbagger, really, who's a yes man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the last thing Congress needed, a yes person. You know, whether it's McLean in neighboring District 9 or John James in District 10, who, you know, if and when, not if, but when you get a Democratic nomination, you challenge him and you're going to give him a fight and you're going to win this seat. So my question, first question is, in your view, will there ever be a solution to a border issue? And will immigration reform ever happen in this country? Because it's been 40 years since anything meaningful has been done. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly hope, I hope so. I mean, the Senate, you know, brought forth a, you know, comprehensive bipartisan bill they passed last month. And the House seemed at first like, oh, we might do that. But then as soon as Donald Trump said no, because they didn't want to give Joe Biden what they considered a win, they killed it. Including John James. And, you know, John James was at Mar-a-Lago last week, you know, kissing the ring of Donald Trump. So it's very clear who's pulling the strings here. And, you know, they're playing politics again over people and good policies. And, you know, and, yeah, it's, you know, there's ways to do this. And everyone talks, and they just don't ever get things done. And everyone wants a strong border. You know, it's not only good for us in this country, but it's also safer for people trying to come to our country because we don't want people being taken advantage of. And then when you talk to business leaders across the country, they're in desperate need of qualified people to fill jobs and that. We're at one of our lowest unemployment, which is great for our country. So it needs to be sensible in that. So I think if we had smart leaders and a Speaker of the House who could actually count and know when he has a vote and when he doesn't have a vote, we could get things done.
Yes.
Speaker of the House, in my opinion, is not qualified for that job at all. He shouldn't be Speaker of the House. I mean,
They fired their CEO, and then they had to go down about 20 rungs into their management thing before they could finally find someone. And it's,
And you know what's sad about it, Dan? You know what's sad about it, though, is that, you know, Trump has to give the go-ahead, you know? And to me, that's appalling because why does one man have so much power, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing that they really enjoy about him, in the sense that he's got that authoritarian personality, that narcissistic authoritarianism. And I guess they find that attractive, but that's what our founding fathers and mothers fought so far hard against, and why we had three separate branches of government, and that to prevent that authoritarianism. And he is dismantling our democracy, and it's very frightening.
We talk about how frightening it is almost every day. It is truly frightening that, you know, Congress has got everyone, you know, afraid. You know, people are actually anxious. I believe they're anxious because things are so unsettled in this country right now, and we need some strong leaders. And we know that Democrats will get the job done. We've seen it. History proves it. So, you know, that's what we have to do. We have to remember that we need Democrats to get this country, you know, keep it going. It's doing well, but keep it going and get these other MAGA Republicans just out and send them away. I don't know how, but just send them away. So,
well, the best way to do that is at the ballot box.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep, we say that all the time, you know, at the ballot box. All right, so my next question is, do you think it is humane that immigrants are being put on buses to other states and being lied to as to why or where they are going?
Well, of course not. That's a terrible way to do things. I understand what the message they were trying to send is like, you know, we have a problem here. Please help us out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the message they were trying to send. But when you won't pick up the phone and say, hey, other city or state, I'm sending some people your way. Instead, they don't tell you and they allow these people to arrive in the middle of the night. That's just, you know, shocking and inhumane and unprofessional. We have to always remember that these are people, these are humans. And many of these cities will take on people, especially if warned, you know, that they, you know, welcome them, help them. You know, many people have family members that were waiting for them, and then they'll ship someone to a different city than what they thought they were going to. And that's just wrong.
That's just so horrible. I can't even imagine, like, a child, you know, or, you know, maybe a teenager, you know, coming to this country trying to, you know, just come and get away from whatever life they were living or not much of a life, and then to be put on a bus or an airplane and send you away and not even have a two nickels to rub together when you land and you don't even know where you are. I can't even imagine how horrific and scared they must feel, you know, just horrified.
That's why having a well-funded border control system where people are getting processed correctly. You know, one of the bills on the floor that that I think is particularly interesting and is making sure there's asylum processing centers in those other countries so that people can go there first, find out if they qualify before they do try to go in legally to this country to claim asylum or what have you. I was speaking to someone the other day that fled Iraq, you know, and he was like, well, I came to this country legally. And I said, did you leave Iraq legally? And he's like, no, I ran with just what I was on my back. And I said, right, so you illegally left your country and that. And he had to think about it for a second. He's like, oh, you're right. You know, so, you know, a lot of times to come into our country legally, you have to have left your country legally itself to get an exit visa or something like that. And if you're, you know, if you're fleeing a drug cartel or what have you, you don't have that ability to do that. So, you know, but at the same time, we want to have a process for people to come in because, you know, going through a river and facing all that, that's not safe for anybody. And then these families getting split apart, it's terrible. And,
it's very dreadful. You know, and speaking of dreadful, Governor Greg Abbott, the Republican governor of Texas, the Supreme Court said he should remove the razor barbed wires that's being used to deter immigrants on the U.S.-Mexico border, and he's being defiant of the Supreme Court order. So Minutemen of the militias moved on to the border and everything to secure it. You know, just regular citizens who are obsessed with guns and everything, it shouldn't be legal. So, you know, I mean, you know, the razor wire has been used already. A woman and two of her sons drowned, and one of the children are cut up to pieces. You know, as a congressperson, since Governor Abbott has been defiant of the Supreme Court, you know, what would be your stance against, you know, somebody like Governor Abbott who's disobeying the law and using Minutemen?
Well, you know, obviously there's a battle going on between the what they would consider states' rights and federal rights. And again, it's not a good way to manage our border. Most migrants and immigrants are still coming through legal pathways and legal entries into our country. But because of backlogs in the border due to the underfunding, this is what cracks me up. They are refusing to fund this. even in their budget bills that they tried to pass in the last year, they're cutting the funding for this. So on one hand, they're like, well, you need a strong border, but we don't want to pay for it. That's just crazy to me that they don't want to fund this. So, you know, these backlogs are creating that, you know, backup at the border. And then there's a lot of bad actors out there and nefarious characters who are taking advantage of desperate people. And I think if we had a better process at the border, communicated it to those countries, how to come to this border legally, it would discourage that, you know. Razor, barbed wire and that is just, a horrific thing.
Yes. And Governor Abbott doesn't even think twice about it. He doesn't care. You know, he truly does not care. He doesn't look at these people as being human beings at all. You know, they're just coming into, you know, his state illegally, and he doesn't care if it was a dog or a cat or it's a human. He doesn't care. You know, that's
that's one of the serious things about the movement that has been going on is the language that is being used. First thing they're doing is dehumanizing people, and that is one of the first steps of any, you know, massive wrong in our in our history. If you go back and look at many of the wrongs that have been done, is to first put that person as less than human. Then it's okay to do things, right? Then it's wrong. So we always have to remember that these are humans and that we need to treat them like humans, and every human is, has dignity and worth.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, Diane, another thing is that a reporter asked Greg Abbott, hey, you know, what will you do besides, you know, that? You know, would you shoot any immigrant coming across the border, even the barbed wire thing? You know, and he said, yeah, he would do that and order that, but he's afraid that he'll get prosecuted. This is how extreme Republicans have gotten over the years and everything, you know, and thank goodness that Michigan, you know, has a governor and people like you running that have common sense and decency and respect for human life, you know, that, you know, not extreme. You know, and it's a good thing that congressional district, they get a person like you because, you know, you're level-headed, you know, you think things through. And, you know, this is what District 10 need in Michigan. But go ahead,
well,
Laurie.
You know, it's very, and I appreciate that. Thank you. It's very easy to sell fear. And and that's what everyone keeps selling. When I look at this congressional 10th district, which is all of southern Macomb County and Rochester and Rochester Hills, it is one of the most diverse communities in the state. I think there's 162 different languages spoken here. We have many, many, many immigrant communities from we have one of the largest Ukrainian communities here. And we have, you know, a lot of people coming that are fleeing the devastation in Ukraine. We have a lot of Bangladeshi. We have, you know, people from different parts of Africa coming here. It's a wonderful, diverse community. And, you know, we need to welcome that. And I enjoy it so much because I learned so much, and the food is great. We have, I always say, food's the great, you know, thing that brings us all together. And having all these different people in that, it's wonderful. And again, of course, we want a strong border. I'm not saying we should have a weak border, but having systems that will allow people to come here legally and the process so that it's easy to understand and people don't make mistakes, that they, you know, can become citizens of this great country, just like my grandparents when they came here in 1924. You know, they were fleeing post World War One, you know, poverty in Norway, and you know that's built a know a life here in the States, and that's what we want for other people too.
Absolutely. In Rochester,
we'll have a call on the line, but you know we'll take a call after you read the next question, Laurie.
Okay. Let's see. Are you satisfied with the job that President Biden and his administration have done in the past 3 years?
you know, they've actually managed to get some pretty amazing things done. The infrastructure bill that they passed is transforming our workforce. It's gaining jobs. You know, I talked to a lot of the union leaders, and they have huge pipelines of work lined up because of this. You know, we've had such a underinvestment in our country's infrastructure for decades that it was fantastic for them to get this passed so that we can rebuild our roads, our bridges, our rural broadband, things like that. And also the CHIPS Act is really transformative as well because we're bringing manufacturing of critical items back to our country. You know, we, of course, we can always do better. I'm always aspirational that we need to keep moving forward in that.
Of course.
So, you know, we can do better. We currently, of course, we talk about this all the time, that we have a you know, Republican leader in the House that, you know, can't do anything. And, you know, it's kind of sad because if we would put politics aside a bit and really focus in on what's best for the country and our state and that, we could get some amazing things done. If we just put our heads and minds together.
Yeah, I, you know, President Biden, in my opinion, is a phenomenal president. You know, coming out of COVID and, you know, all the policies that they have put into place, they have not stopped working. They really have not. And, you know, the economy is doing well and the stock market is doing well. Like you said, you know, unemployment is very low. It is a shame that the Republican Party cannot embrace that right now because
I was just going to say, you know, one of the things that, you know, would be a negative that people talk a lot about is inflation. But inflation isn't, you know, one, it's not always something that a president can control. But, you know, when you're coming out of a an unbelievable pandemic in which our supply chains were completely shattered, and you have to work your way through a lot of those systems. And that we're seeing already inflation, you know, come down drastically. Gas in my neighborhood's under $3 now. That's pretty amazing. So, but you know, I don't want to minimize it. Some people are still feeling the pinch, but we have to reflect on why that is. So as a financial planner and someone who manages, you know, a lot of money, when you look at corporate profits and you go, wow, you know, corporate profits are soaring and inflation's come down. That means, you know, so that bag of chips, I don't know if you've ever heard of shrinkflation. You know, I opened up a bag of Doritos or something that the other day, one of my favorites. And I was like, where are the Doritos? You know, they cut the bag the same. They only filled it halfway up, and they're charging the same, but it's really half the. But they're still, but they're lining their pockets, and no one really talks about that.
No, you know that's what's so frustrating is because we know that the corporations are greedy, and they're only about their own bottom line. They really don't care, you know, if the American people need a little bit of relief. You know, and that would be good for everyone, but they don't care.
Well,
a
company's
only
going to act in its best interest. So until it gets called to the carpet, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. But it's our job as, you know, elected official or the regulating type things to call them to the carpet. And right now, no one is doing that.
No, absolutely not. No, I agree.
Yes.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes. Okay, we're in season 6, episode 40. We have Diane Young. She is running for United States Congress in 2024. She's running a Democratic primary in Congressional District 10 in the great state of Michigan. You know, we'll take some calls right now and everything. The number to call is 515-605-9802. Say first name and where you're calling from, and please be respectful to the candidate. And don't speak over her, and don't speak over us, because if that happened, we're just going to have to cut you off. So all background music off, all background sounds and noises off. So we're going to take our first call from Macomb County. We have Elaine calling from Macomb County. Hello, Elaine. What's cooking?
Hi, Elaine.
Oh, good evening. Good evening, Laurie. Good evening, David. And
good evening,
Diane. I like what I'm hearing, and I would like to continue. This is your time.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
good.
So next question then. Yeah, what do you feel about GOP's unwavering support of a dangerous man like Donald Trump? Are you nervous about the upcoming general elections? Because, as you know, January 6th, 2021, based on what he said and his fiery speech, they got, you know, incensed and went down there on Capitol Hill, broke in, smashed the place up. I think that was a dry one. So what do you feel about Donald Trump? And they're, you know, he's a dangerous man. Are you nervous about the upcoming generation?
Yeah, well, you know, you have people like John James enabling him. That's mm-hmm. a bit scary. What's scary to me is that how many people, elected officials, who while I might not agree with their policies or their politics, I used mm-hmm. to think they were at least, I don't know, like a normal politician, right? You know, or someone, you know, mm-hmm. a Republican, and that they're willing to throw all that out the window to follow this man off a cliff is a little bit mm-hmm. frightening to me.
It is.
I'm mm-hmm. hoping that we're not in for something worse than January 6th. I think one of the good signs that was recently brought up is that Donald Trump had over 200,000 less donors in January than he did at a corresponding time.
Good.
You know, at the last election. So he's losing mm-hmm. those small donors because I think they're realizing all their money is going to pay his legal fees.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, the thing that does scare me the most about a Donald Trump presidency is mm-hmm. who will be running the show at all the different departments. The Heritage Foundation, mm-hmm. a very, mm-hmm. you know, right-wing organization, has
yep.
something out called the 2025 Plan, which
yep.
is training, mm-hmm. currently training people out there to go into the administration positions with their full plan to basically gut the government from within. And, you know, it's very easy for us to sit there on the outside, or if I'm not someone who understands what the government actually does, to go, sure, what would I care, gut the government. But, you know, they don't realize, well, that meat you're eating in your hamburger was inspected by a government meat inspector, or
yep.
you know, that toy that your child is, you know, gnawing on because they're a toddler doesn't have lead in it because there was a customs official at the port of entry in Long Beach, California, inspecting that box that mm-hmm. come over from, you know, China or wherever that product was made. That the border control, your veterans, you know, there's 16 million veterans, and there's over 1 million active duty military. You know, these are all the things that they talk about, you know, that they're really planning on gutting so much of this. So that's mm-hmm. what scares me more than Donald Trump the person, is the people that are using him to do these mm-hmm. fantastical things to destroy our government.
Mm-hmm.
And
destroy
mm-hmm.
the country. Abortion. You look, the number one thing that Donald Trump got, well, actually, I want to go back to before even Trump got elected, and that would be Mitch McConnell mm-hmm. throwing all Senate customs out to block the Supreme Court nominee at the time, Merrick Garland,
mm-hmm.
from becoming
mm-hmm.
the Supreme Court nominee. And now, fast forward 8 years, you know, what they have done to women's rights is just atrocious.
So, yeah, we can't. You absolutely.
So that can all go back to that, and then they just use Trump to get their way, and then, of course, he got to put in more people into the Supreme Court. Anyway, I shall stop ranting.
Yeah, so Trump,
okay.
So basically
Diane
Trump is a useful idiot, you know, where
yeah,
you know, he isn't qualified
well,
for the job.
I disagree. He
doesn't
I do
have
not
a temperament.
I do not
mm-hmm.
think he's an idiot. You know, that's something
mm-hmm.
that people say, and I'm like, I do not think he's an idiot. He's a manipulator,
mm-hmm.
and he
yep.
knows
mm-hmm.
how to manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
And just like many cult leaders, and he has figured that out.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
I look forward to the day that the spell has been broken, and
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
can go back to fighting about policy or what have you. That's fine. Let's
mm-hmm.
argue about policy, but. You know, his the things that they're arguing about now are just fantastical.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I think he is not only, I think he is the best con man that that's been on this earth. I truly do. Because if you think about it, he knows how to twist people. He knows how to use words. He can be funny, but yet he means what he says. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like off the chain what he says, and people laugh at it because they think, oh, that can't be true. But he really means what he says. You know, he really does.
Mm-hmm.
He was dead serious when he said he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. I was working in New York City in the 90s when, you know, he was kind of like his heydays in the 90s. And no one there in the community thought, wow, what a great philanthropist. What a great, you know, no one thought that. And then when he rose to power in 2016, everyone in New York, my friends in New York were like, how could this be, you know? But, you know, people believe this mythology around him. So, you can buy a pair of gold sneakers from him, too, now, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I read about that? It's that they're not even going to – they are going to be prepaid, and maybe July is when you'll get them, maybe.
I think no one will actually get them. And you could sue them, and they'll lose them in court anyway, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be happy to spray paint a pair of tennis shoes for you and send them to you.
Right. Yeah, like what have the Air Jordans, that should call this the Air Treasons. We're speaking with Diane Young for Congress. She's a Democrat running in a crowded field now, and she's going to be hopefully the Democratic nominee. And she faced John James, a congressman in District 10 now, who's a Trump rubber stamp. 515-605-9802, say first name, where you're calling from. We'd love to hear from everybody. And Diane will take your calls and everything. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's cooking? Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Atlanta. Hello. Okay, let's try that again. Welcome to the show. What's cooking? Can you hear me? Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah, I don't know what's happening. Okay, so let's go on to the next question until the person is ready to speak.
Okay, that's fine. What do you think about... Oh, we did that one already. I'm sorry. Do you think President Biden is too old to run again? If yes, who do you think could have run instead?
Well, you know, this is how I look at that. I look at, you know, the president position is like the CEO of a corporation. Of course, I'm in the business world. You know, and so the CEO... You know, Warren Buffett's in his 90s. No one's asking him to step down from Berkshire Hathaway. And, he's the CEO, and he appoints all the people around him to run the day-to-day activities of the show. So, you know, when I look at his cabinet, when I look at all those people, he's got an amazing cabinet of people that are super qualified, know what they're doing, running the different departments. So I am fine with that because it's at the pinnacle of his career and that. I love the fact, you know, obviously we want our next generation to come up and that, but, you know, I will, you know, he's been doing a great job. So let's give him another shot, especially to take on Trump. You know, you're really going to have to be able to let those baby-like insults run off your back, and I think Biden showed that he can handle the toddler.
Yeah, he's been toddling
Trump to the toddler.
And you know, it's funny because Donald Trump is what, 77 years old. He's not that far behind him. You know, but that's never brought up either. And as far as
you know,
Donald Trump's mental state, you know. He's kind of crazy, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I will. I heard a comedian recently do an analogy. It's like he said, it's like you're taking two therapy dogs to the children's hospital, and one is a nice basset hound that will, you know, maybe be a little slobbery and kind of hard to get up the steps or whatever, but the kids love them and that. And the other one is a crazed weasel that will attack your kids. So what would would you rather have? I'm like, yeah, I'll take the old Basset Hound, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I look at the heart, too. When you look at the heart of these men, there's a huge difference in them, for sure.
Oh, God. I don't think Trump has a heart. That's my opinion. I truly do not believe. I think maybe that was not given to him at birth. He's got something else in there instead, pumping his blood. But as far as President Biden goes, President Biden does have a heart, and he does care about people. And it's very evident when he speaks or when he's in the audience, and he has people in the audience, and you can tell that he's just got this love for people. And, you know, some people find it creepy, but it's not, because he has compassion. And
I listened to him talking to the one of the families of the young servicewoman that was killed in the Iraq thing that happened a few weeks ago. And I mean, it was just they were recording it. The family recorded his call to them, and it was just so touching, so touching. I couldn't imagine Donald Trump having that kind of caring discussion with a family that lost a child in one of our conflicts.
Absolutely not. He put his ex-wife in his golf course as a cemetery. So think about that. I still can't get over that one.
Right. This weird. He's weird. You know, there's good weird, and then there's weird that, you know, you just find it creepy. Yeah, so Donald Trump is a creepy weird. You know, certain different women coming forward, accusing them of groping and, you know, doing worse things to them and everything. I think in this day and age that Me Too is important. You know, women deserve respect, you know. And you know, I don't know why people out there would really consider voting for Donald Trump, because he's shown us who he is, you know. And when somebody tell you who he is, who they are, believe them, because, you know, he is not, he has no class. You know, take away all the money and the pomp and pageantry, what is he? Just some, you know, person who probably come from a trailer park. He exerts such behavior. You know, he's boorish. He smells, because, you know, he wears adult diapers and everything. And, you know, not hitting that, because, you know, when you get older, you get, you know,
I don't know about that, but okay. I'll take your word for that
You know, but, you know. Okay, so next question for me is, what challenges do you think you face as a candidate running against, you know, first a Democratic field, and then not if, but when, your nominee? What challenges do you face against, you know, Congressman John James in Congressional District 10, Michigan?
Well, you know, John is obviously a prolific fundraiser. He's got a big war chest, but, you know, money doesn't buy you everything in this district. So the fact that he spent a ton of money and barely won last time, you know, and he's flip-flopped consistently on his support for Trump. You know, one time he said, oh, he shouldn't be, you know. So he really flip-flops a lot. I think the strongest thing is, you know, John James called abortion genocide. And, you know, that particular issue won in a landslide, Proposition 3 here in the county. And, you know, we are going to hold his feet to the fire of his, you know, extreme views on that. You know, it's my belief that no politician should be in the room with you and your doctor. And, you know, reproductive freedom is one of my top issues. And, you know, we have to hold John James to his previous comments on this. And just like we say about Donald Trump, if they say something, we should believe them. James is also, you know, he introduced a bill to ban people over the age of 76 from running for office, yet Donald Trump's 77. He endorsed them right away. You know, he's even against abortion in the case of rape or incest. And what was really scary, because he's, you know, he served, he was a veteran himself, and that he played politics with the budget and jeopardized services for veterans. I was really honored to recently be endorsed by the Michigan Democratic Party's Veterans Caucus. My father served in World War II and Korea, and just passed away 2 years ago at the age of 94. He would be appalled at how NATO is being weakened by Donald Trump and by his enablers like John James. We have to fight this back. We've had one of the longest, peace times in Europe because of NATO, and Putin is pushing and pushing on this. And the fact that they're even thinking of not funding Ukraine and that is just shocking to me. I've been to many vigils with the Ukrainians here in our community, and they're very, very concerned about this, and we have to pass the Ukrainian funding bill.
Absolutely. And do you think that the Ukrainian people that you have spoken to in your district understand that it's not the Democrats that are stopping the funding, it's the Republicans?
Yeah.
They understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good then. Because, that's another thing that they do. They constantly are blaming, President Biden for everything. And, I don't know who believes what. That's part of the problem.
You need to have good people telling the message out there. I think we're hopefully going to start having some people out there doing more messaging to tell the people what's going on. But you're right. I mean, my family are union Democrats, union carpenters. And Joe Biden signed a bill that saved their pension recently. And many of my brother's carpenter friends think it's Trump. And even though he'll show them the piece of paper on it that shows Joe Biden's signature on it, they still won't believe him. And I'm like, I don't know what else to do if you can't get someone to actually believe something that I don't know. But
where did they get this idea, you think? I mean, where did that idea come from? How can they logically, as a carpenter, you're pretty darn smart. My stepfather was a carpenter, and he was a brilliant man. So, how can they not understand that he is against, he doesn't even know what a union is for. I'm sure of that. And
he showed up here to support the unions in a non-union house. Don't know. I think there's just, I do a lot of behavioral studies as part of my work and that to understand how people make decisions. And sometimes people, once they have whatever they think is correct, know about a new information that's going to stop them. Now, here's a little bit of the difference that I know from being friends with many Democratic leaders is despite that, they will continue to do the right thing. Despite not getting credit for it, a mean, vindictive person like Donald Trump would say, well, I'm not going to sign that because I'm not going to get thanked for it. Joe Biden would never do that. He'd say, you know what, the right thing for me to do is sign that whether or not they thank me or not.
Absolutely.
And that's what a good person will do, even in the face of, not getting credit for something. A good person will say, I don't care about getting the credit for that. I care more about the people getting their benefits, kids getting their food, immigrants getting an appropriate legal process to come to our country, those things. Mm-hmm. A good person will think those things, and that's what we need to have. We need to have more good people in Congress that are focused in on their heart as opposed to the politics or their egos.
Exactly. We need people with empathy. Empathy and to use their brain and common sense. It's crazy. So I'm going to go on to the next question. If and when elect, can you fight and work to stop Trumpism and this dangerous rhetoric by the MAGA Republicans in the House of Representatives?
Well, the first thing we do to defeat it is by making them in the minority is the first thing you can do, because then they can howl from the sidelines all they want. And we can also do it by delivering real results and communicating that. If I had a criticism for my party is that we're not the best at communicating and marketing. Republicans are much better at simplifying a concept and making it digestible for someone, even though it's often wrong.
100%.
You know, so we just need to keep working at it, keep fighting the fight, get a speaker, you know, get Hakeem Jeffries into the speaker role, because he's schooled by, you know, Nancy Pelosi. Nancy, you know, knew how to count, and she knew when to bring a bill to that. She knew when to release a member from a critical vote. You know, and I know when you're running an organization like that, it's like herding cats. You know, even the Democrats are like herding cats, and the Republicans are like herding cats. It's very difficult to herd cats. But you can do it if you make each member feel heard and loved and listened to, and keep the focus on moving our country forward.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely right. Yep.
So, Diane, based on your earlier answer to one of the questions, so we'll take it that you are on abortion issues. You're pro-choice.
Yes. I don't believe that, you know, the people do not want the government in their doctor's office. So, and what I mean by that, you could, you know, I've had friends that have lost babies, you know, had miscarriages and they're facing terrible decisions at that time. And what we're talking about is having the county prosecutor be brought in to determine whether or not you can have a procedure done. Or do you have to go out and wait in the parking lot, in the hospital parking lot, and continue to bleed out until your life is on edge before you can have a procedure done? That is unacceptable.
It is.
And of course, you are a pro-choice, or excuse me, a pro-life person. Well, you know what? You don't have to have an abortion. You know, that's
exactly the
word choice, you know? So, you know, but it's really, when you look at the states, you know, like Colorado, you know, made birth control free and made it super easy, and abortions fell 42%, like, within a year.
Yeah.
So it's like, why aren't we doing that, you know? Hello? So instead, we have states like these, many states that have, you know, reduced access to reproductive care, birth control, women's health. And now what do we have is, you know, climbing maternal deaths. We have all sorts of things going on. We have rising, you know, venereal diseases, all sorts of things. So, you know, we have to get back to those science-based approaches.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
We have an online question, and a person from Alabama, Wolf in Alabama, is asking, Gretchen Whitmer, is she and Democrats doing enough to protect voting rights in Michigan?
Oh, well, first off, I'm sorry about you being from Alabama.
I know.
So bad. So the question is Gretchen Whitmer doing enough for voting rights in Michigan? I would say we're doing an amazing job on voting rights. You know, we now have 9 days of in-person voting ahead of an election. You know, we can always do better, but, you know, we need to make sure that people want to vote. I know in my own town we just had a special election for state rep, and we only had a 10% turnout. I was like, oh, no, you know, this is – I mean, lucky for us, my candidate got through, but it always saddens me that so many people sit on the sidelines on these elections. So I think we've been doing an amazing job. I think Michigan has become a shining star for many. And if you guys all remember back in 2018, when we had three women at the top of the ticket, everyone said, oh, they're crazy. No one's going to elect three women. And we elected three women, and guess what?
That's right.
We've had all this amazing stuff happen. So
I agree. I'm so proud to live in Michigan. You know, I really am.
You know, and that's why it's why we have to fight for this House back, because if you know, John James and they continue, if Donald Trump and they have the House, they could put a national abortion ban into place.
Oh, I know they could. But that's their goal. We know that.
Yeah.
We know that's their goal. You know, they're not hiding that either, you know.
Yeah, it's so disgraceful that Republicans want to, you know, rule, you know, what a woman should do in her own body, you know, and haven't given a fight for them to have, you know, different birth control methods, you know, but yet still members of Congress, men members of Congress, get free Viagra pills unlimited. No,
oh, let's not go
that,
into
you know?
That.
You know, it's ridiculous.
I don't want...
These people, and you know, if you're gay or LGBTQ, they're judgmental in terms of, you know, oh, the Bible says, you know, God says. I mean, as far as Thomas Jefferson concerned and forefathers, the founders of these countries, this country, that did say point blank that the Constitution must not be, you know, mixed with the Bible because, you know, it wasn't born off a Christian, as a Christian nation, America. You know,
yeah,
so
well,
having said that, we'll have another call. This one from Flint, Michigan. When you call, say your first name, where you're calling from, 515-605-9802 is the number to call. Hello, Flint, Michigan. What's cooking?
Hi, this is Doris. I just
Doris.
On about 10 minutes ago, so you might have talked about something I didn't know, and I don't know if you've had this question with our guest. One of the things I'm wondering, she's not there yet, and I'm very happy she's running, and I've heard many positive things. In terms of being in Michigan and with what's going on over in Gaza and the many people that are dismayed and the fact that that could make a difference, have you any thoughts about that? Because what we're seeing is no response of any kind except some disrespect from Netanyahu with the concerns people have.
So what's exactly your question?
How do you feel about what's going on, or are you okay with what's happening right now? It seems that Netanyahu is just disregarding what is being said, and a lot of people are concerned with the massive killings in Gaza.
I'm very, very concerned about this. Obviously, you know, our heart lies with the Palestinian and the innocent lives that are being caught in this crossfire. You know, I mean, Hamas, you know, what Hamas did to start all this was absolutely shocking and terrifying and terrible, and the fact that they're still holding hostages is terrible also. So we have to always remember that there's a terrorist organization not only holding Israeli citizens hostage, they're, you know, kind of holding Palestinians hostage too. With that being said, I strongly believe that Netanyahu has got to go personally, and this right-wing government is not doing anyone any favors. And this, in my opinion, there needs to be a two-state solution. We need to have the people there deciding what they want to do. I've been obviously over the last, you know, few months doing a lot of reading and research on this, and it seems like a lot of the people in that community don't get to decide their own future. So with that being said, you know, we have to, you know, trying to get these humanitarian things into Gaza is imperative. There's too many people dying, and, you know, pushing everyone into one part of the country and then telling them, well, now you got to go to another part of the country, but there's nothing for them to go to is shocking as well. So what I'd love to see, and I said this from the day after this first thing happened, is like we need a Marshall Plan. Just like in Europe, you know, when Europe, World War II ended, it was, you know, so much of the continent was razed, and we had the Marshall Plan to rebuild things. Because if we don't re-win over the hearts and minds of the people, then we've just created a new generation of, you know, people are going to hate us and Israelis and that. So, you know, we have to, you know, support in any way we can and put the pressure on them. They're not the only conflict out there. There's some other major genocides going on out there as well, including in Africa and other parts of the world too, that we have to continue to try to do our best to help and minimize as these civilian casualties.
Thank you. Yes. That was interesting. A Marshall Plan. That was interesting. No one said anything like that. So anyway, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, the
okay,
next
so
question,
do you...
I think. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Lori.
I was just going to say the next question that we were going to ask, we actually touched upon it about Ukraine and your support. And you did say that you definitely support Ukraine, and we all agree with that. We definitely agree that, you know, Ukraine is a democracy, and we have to preserve their democracy. So you can talk a little more about that if you like.
Sure. I mean, what happened there is, you know, with Putin just attacking a country like that unprovoked, people were sitting in cafes and all of a sudden it's like, hello, his plan is not to stop there. So, we need to put up and allow help the Ukrainians defend themselves so that we can keep Russia where Russia is. And clearly, what he's done in the last couple of weeks, he's shown that he has complete disregard to that. I know the Biden administration tomorrow will be announcing additional sanctions on Putin. I don't know how good that is. I heard someone the other day tell me that Putin, they think, is actually the richest man in the world. I was like, wow, that's pretty wild. So
I wouldn't doubt that. Mm-hmm.
So, Putin is a great, I think he has proven himself, he's a great danger not just to Ukraine, to Europe, and to us by extension, because these are our allies. We've stood together for 70 years, and he is threatening that. And again, it's these authoritarian regimes, North Korea, and that we have to continue to fight against.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Agree.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, so Governor Whitmer, I think, doing a great job, fantastic job. The trio woman there, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, they're all doing great jobs. So, in a couple of years' time, Gretchen Whitmer will be termed out. So who would you like to see as our successor in the next gubernatorial elections in Michigan? Do you see anybody, as of this moment, who could fill her big shoes? Or, you're going to take a wait-and-see attitude?
Here's the great thing about Michigan right now. I would say 15, 20 years ago, I'd be like, wow, we don't have a deep bench. We have an amazing bench of talent out there. Garland Gilchrist, the lieutenant governor, is amazing. Jocelyn Benson is amazing. Dana Nessel is amazing. There are a lot of people out there that may want to run for the governorship come 2026. I look forward to seeing who wants to throw their hat into the ring and run a statewide campaign. It's not that easy to do. So I'll let that process take itself, because I would be happy with any of them. I'll tell you who I wouldn't be happy with, and that's John James, which I think if he wins this election this year, that's his next step, is to run for governor in 2026. So another reason to take him out this time is to prevent him from being governor in 2026, because I think he would undo all the great things that have been done.
You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely right. John James is just, he's not good for Michigan. That's how I feel about him. He's just not good for Michigan. We absolutely do not. Let's see, where are we now? We asked about Governor Whitmer. So as the, we kind of went over Putin. So let's ask the last question. If elected, will you work to help reform gun control laws? And what are some of the things that you would like change gun violence in this country?
Well, of course, there's a lot we can continue to do. We can ban assault rifles. We could start having more red flag laws, and universal background checks, I think, are great steps to start that. Studies show that when you have those, the access to that. We're not talking about taking people's hunting guns away, or guns that are owned legally and that. I have many friends that hunt and things like that, and that's fine. We just want responsible gun ownership. And, I think we can do that. And I think the American public is ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I saw this sign that this teenager had, and she was at a protest somewhere. I don't know where it was, but this really, really got to me. She said, "If I die in a school shooting, leave my body on the steps of Congress." That says everything. It's it
too
really
funny.
Does.
Too funny.
Hey, David, is Eric online?
Well, can I turn around and ask you guys some questions? What are you hearing from people out there? I mean, what are some of the things that you're hearing from people out there that we haven't discussed already?
Well, I think the gun issue, when you talk to someone about the gun issue, they'll just throw that Second Amendment right in your face, that Second Amendment right. Well, and then I turn around and I'll say, well, what about my rights? Guns scare me. I don't want to see people walking around with guns in a store. I just don't want to see that. And I will leave the store, and I'll go, to the manager and tell them why I'm leaving the store. That's just how I feel about it. So, we come to a point in this country where people with guns feel like it's their right, like it's a human right. No, not really. It's not a human right. That is not what the Second Amendment was supposed to be, was it? No. In my opinion, it wasn't.
I think it's a little nonsensical again too. So, I think focusing on universal background checks. For years they couldn't even study gun violence in our country. They couldn't even study it because the gun lobby had blocked the ability to do that. And the universal background checks, everyone thinks, they just go to a computer. No, it used to be done in paper, and they used to have to, file a piece of paper and go to, it used to be this archaic system. They made it so hard, and, just some crazy stuff. So, anyway, we can do better. What else are you hearing, if anything?
David, what are you hearing?
Well, we're hearing about, the women's rights and everything. Of course, incel men and insecure men. Think that woman should know the place and, just be a traditional housewife and mother and what have you. I think this is good that you're running you're running against a man who is, beholden to Donald Trump, who's beholden to Putin. And, as far as I'm concerned, Alexander Smirnoff, he was rearrested today. And, he was working as a Russian asset and everything. But yet still we'll have Republicans in Congress, talking up with this man, getting information from him, which was wrong information. So I think a person like you in Congress, who's level-headed, who, is experienced in life, who, is not a hothead and just jump to conclusions, you get... you think things through and what have you. You're not impulsive, better yet, you're not a liar like Jim Jordan and whomever else is in there now. So as far as I'm concerned, the Republican Party should sign up as Russian assets because they don't mean well to this country. And I can't sort of love this country when they're just beholden to Putin and kissing Trump's ring, who's saying all these things in support of dictators. So we'll get back a lot of feedback like that.
Eric is on the line. He just messaged me. He would like to ask Diane a question.
Sure, Eric.
Hey, everybody up here.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, do we have Elaine, Susie?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm
and
on
Ammon,
the line.
Susan,
Susan's on the line.
Yep.
Okay, Susan, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Elaine, are you here?
You have a question for Diane, Eric?
Yes, yes. So, hi, Diane. My name is Eric Brantley. I'm also here in the state of Michigan, and I'm also a producer and occasional co-host of this show. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. I did see your page not too long ago, and I saw that you were running for John James' seat, and I've kind of been behind on things, so I'm in the process right now of looking through the list of the candidates who are running for these different congressional, gubernatorial, senatorial spots. As much as I'd like to, you know, I always express the importance of paying attention to politics on the local level as much as the presidential level. And so a couple things. So one, are you the only Democrat running for that spot? Are there others? Or
yeah, there. It's actually a little bit crowded right now. We have a total of 6 people running for this, including the gentleman that ran last time and didn't win. And then we have 3 people that don't live in the district that are running. A lot of people don't know this, but in Michigan, you don't have to live in the district in order to run, or actually you don't even to represent. But I'm the only one that's earned really any significant endorsements. I've already earned several union endorsements, and over 50 Michigan leaders have already endorsed my campaign, because people who've known me for years, because I've been very active in the community, know that when I say I'm going to do something, I do it and I deliver. So, I'm very proud of all the endorsements that I've earned. And we just had a volunteer night at my office in Rochester, and I had 10 people show up tonight to spend a couple hours writing out postcards. So I was like, wow, I've really already got, you know, volunteers showing up and things like that. So we really have a grassroots movement. And over 40% of my donors come from the district, which none of the other candidates, most of them are like only 5 to 7% come from the district. So, you know, it shows that I have a lot of grassroots support in the district. So I'm very excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, good. Let's see. I'll tell you this. So what I do outside of just this show here, I also kind of do like my own YouTube thing, and I do live on Facebook where I talk to many different figures of the Democratic Party, candidates, activists, organizers, officials, journalists, anybody who is involved in our party and is helping us and helping our candidates. To make this real quick, I will say that there's a plan that I propose to everybody here, that I will put this in a video soon. I'll try to get to it this weekend. I have what's called a 20-state strategy, which is where we try to convince all the top Democrats in all the real swing states and all the blue states to go to these different areas, look at the congressional candidates, look at the senatorial candidates, really stomp hard for them, talk about our accomplishments that we've done in these past few years, not just the Biden-Harris accomplishments, but the accomplishments of the Democrats who run that state, because this is really an attempt to not just to help the president get reelected, but also to really help the candidates of that race and really to sway and really convince more and more independent and undecided voters, because we all know that those are the voters that make up the majority of the bloc in certain states. That includes Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio. And I've got a list of about 20 states. And if you follow me on Facebook, I'll send it to you later on just so you get more of a clue. But I am interested to do a live video with you, if you're okay with that, pretty soon.
Sure.
As of right now, I'm free on Saturdays and Sundays. It could be at any time. It could be morning, afternoon, evening, night. I kind of let the candidate, the guest host, the guest decide that. So right now, there's not too many official endorsements I'm doing in a lot of areas, but I am interested to have anybody who wants to come on, they can come on, and I definitely would like to have you on there.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Eric.
Yes,
ma'am. Okay, we're going to take a little musical interlude and everything, and when we come back, we'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people online. So when we come back from this musical interlude, you know, whatever question you have for Diane, you know, you're going to ask it and everything. This is Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. The number is 515-605-9802. And the music interlude is Vampire Weekend by Diane Young. I didn't know he sang Diane. Wow.
The song is called Diane Young. The band is
right,
called Vampire Weekend.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for clearing that up and everything. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes, and you know, we'll take your questions for Diane Young, who's running for Congressional District 10 in the state of Michigan.
You talk about like a police. I've got to find some better reason for 5 me to run around the bend when the government needs to surround you again.
Politics 1-8, a show where speaking with Thad Young, Democrat, running for the United States Congress for the Democratic nomination. She's in District 10, and as you heard in the interview, she is running in a crowded field at the moment, and we hope that she wins because she's a good person, and, you know, ready to take questions and all. You know, so who want to go first? Elaine, Susie, who, Naj is here as well. Anybody has questions for Diane?
Yeah, I've got a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Diane, what do you think about improving our transit system here in Michigan? Let me give you an example. Handicapped, elderly, reaches a point where you can't drive.
Right.
And the only thing we have is buses. We have a lot of train tracks. Is there any way of improving the train travel? I'll give you an example. I live, I shouldn't give that on the air. I live in an area close to a railroad track that could go straight downtown. Do you see anything in the future that might improve our travel throughout the state via train?
Well, you know, I jokingly say I would love to have some of that 19th century technology again. You know, I used to live in New York, and they built their subway system and train system, you know, back in the late 19th century, and it's still, you know, it's going strong. And I could travel from my house in Westchester to Brooklyn without ever leaving, you know, a train. So it's really saddens me to see the lack of mass transportation in our region, because it is holding our country, our region back. So I'd be very supportive of policies or funding to get more mass transportation. And what you're speaking of is the different types of transportation for those who can't get around easily, which is imperative. And more younger people, such as my daughter, don't drive. And she was just offered a job, and her cost for Ubering is going to take a third of her paycheck out to get to and from work, because there's not, you know, or if she did use the bus system, it would be an hour and a half to go, something that would normally take about 25 minutes. So that would be 3 hours of her day, and, which is exhausting.
No.
For, you know, so you know, we really, you know, are way behind the curve on that. And it's one of the reasons that economically it's holding our region back. So I would work very hard to promote that. I know I actually was at a function with a county commissioner the other day, and, you know, because Oakland County did pass mass transit, they're now opening up fast bus lane up Rochester Road, you know, in Oakland County, which I was like, wow, you know. We need to do more of that. The solutions are out there. We just need to have people who will be willing to have the vision and do the hard work to get that done. Now, when you talk about these train tracks, they're not owned by the public. So, you know, you have to work with all those different partners that do own those train tracks.
Yes. So, Dan, somebody online asking a question here. As a Michigander, what are your thoughts on Republican Party splitting up in different divisions? Because one faction supports Trump, and other one support the establishment Republicans. You, as a Democrat and a Michigander, what's your thoughts on it?
You know, I've been so busy focused on my own campaign that I haven't really had a lot of time to watch the chaos over there. I just know it is impacting them tremendously, and I get a little bemused when I find out that they mismanage their funds and that, because they're supposed to be the party of fiscal responsibility. So, you know, I think I personally will just focus in on our own house and making sure that we are offering the public a strong alternative to that, and hopefully they'll get their act together, because I do believe that we do do best when we have a two-party system in which we're pushing against each other to come up with the best ideas. I'm a big believer in what I call heat and pressure make diamonds. So, you know, we want to have – whenever I look at any issue, I will go research an opposition view of it so that I can fully understand the entire 360 view of that, so that I can make sure that I'm forming a full opinion of something and not, again, just digesting one side of an issue, because there are two sides on some issues, and we need to be very careful about how we structure things. So, I'm just going to worry about us right now and worry about pushing policies and keeping people in the front of my mind.
Yes. Okay, so Dan's website is danyoungforcongress.com, and, you know, please go visit that website and, you know, register with the website, donate some money, and donate some time in volunteering, going door-to-door and what have you. Phone banking, that's very important, you know, because we need people like Dan Young in Congress. You know, we need people with integrity, with vision, with experience. You know, she's a financial planner, and we'll have a lot of lawyers and doctors within Congress, whether the House or U.S. Senate. You know, so we need somebody who know how to be fiscally responsible. She's pro-woman's choice, you know, as we spoke about on the show today. You know, she is... you can say that she's a progressive, but she listens to everybody, and you know, having considered listening to everybody, you know, she'll take decisions lightly. You know, she would represent District 10 better than how John James is doing now, because she's no rubber stamp for anybody, and that's what District 10 is dying for. You know, good representation. And I feel, and we feel here on the show, that Dan is the best person for that. You know, so last chance. Any questions for Dan?
Yeah, I have one. I've been waiting.
Yes. Suze, go ahead with your question.
Well, I would vote for her right this minute and wish she had a twin that I could vote for in my district. I live in Frankfurt, so I can't vote for her, but I love her. I like everything she said. I have one more thing she can work on when she gets to Washington. the big pharmas. We got to put a kibosh on the big businesses that are gouging prices for medications and so forth. You guys heard me before. My daughter's diabetic since she was 10. Insulin used to be $40 a vial. Now it's anywhere from $3.50. And I just had a story on our local news that this poor girl was charged $600 because she uses the EpiPens. And $600 a month for her insulin that costs $8 to make. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
And you know, my husband has an inhaler, that one that they advertise Trilogy. That's $700 a month. And the one that they're putting them on now is $550. How can people afford this? Not to mention how much they charge you for chemotherapy and all that other stuff. A friend of mine just died, and they were spending $30,000 a month on their cancer treatment. And I have another one that's in stage four, and it's $10,000 a month. Why? Yep. How can people afford this? Our medical care is ridiculous. When you look at Europe and Canada, they're getting the same medicines, and they're paying $40 in Canada and Europe for the insulin that my kid's paying $450. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be.
It is about accountability and you know, making sure that these big corporations are paying their fair share. You know, one thing that always burns my britches, as I like to say, is, you know, we are offering many companies corporate welfare in the sense that not necessarily big pharma, but many companies that rely on low wage workers, like maybe a Walmart or something like that, and something like 40% of their workers are receiving some form of government assistance because they're not paying a livable wage. So, you know, we have these companies that are really taking advantage of the system, and we as the taxpayers are footing the bill. And, in fact, there's a commercial out right now with Jeff Bridges, and I forget the name of the nonprofit, but it's basically like send money to help feed hungry kids in America. I'm like screaming at the TV. I'm like, if companies paid their employees a livable wage, they wouldn't be hungry. So how about we have the companies pay their employees a livable wage and that? And you're absolutely right. You know, the things like corporate stock buybacks and things like that that are hurting the process and everything, things like the carried interest loophole, which, you know, is an unbelievable way for the super rich to get richer and that. And one of the ways I'll stay in late, I won't bore people with my details on that one. Sorry. I could go on and on. And how they're getting us taxed on our Social Security, everything. These are the issues that as a financial planner, I can bring to the table and have those conversations with people to really get them to understand who is really footing the bill for all of this.
That's quite an asset, and it, you know, being a financial planner, it would be a great thing. Go ahead, David.
We'll have a statement of support from you. Aaron from Ohio, he says that, you know, politicians love taking undeserved credit, and John James is one such politician, and that is why everybody in Congressional District 10 in Michigan should support you, Diane. Because, you know, you're a woman of integrity and decency, and, you know, you don't bow to pressure easily. So that's Aaron from Ohio. That's what he said. Okay, who's next with a question? Naj in Atlanta, are you there? Okay, no. yes, man, so we'll have just on the 25 minutes left and everything.
Go ahead. How do we get the big money out of the government politicians, you know, like, because they reversed, they make corporation people too, and they can contribute to the congressional guys running all they want, and therefore they're beholding to the people that donate. I mean, there's a never-ending, you know, millions and millions of dollars. It never used to be like this. There was
Citizens United.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, you know, when that got passed and they were like, corporations are people, too, I was like, I have a corporation. You know, I'm a company. I don't think my company has the same civil liberties that a human does. So, you know, we have to overturn Citizens United. I think we need to clamp down on kind of the revolving door of, you know, you leave Congress and you immediately can become a, you know, lobbyist or whatever. I don't think it's immediate, but most people figure out some way, you know, to get around some of that. And, you know, here's the cost to running for Congress is this crazy. I mean, when I tell people that I have to raise a bare minimum of $1 million, and that's a bare minimum just for my primary, and then it's probably $5 million for the general. It's super expensive, partly because of the new technology that's out there. In the olden days, you just sent some postcards to people, maybe called them on the phone, and maybe ran a couple ads on TV, and you're all set. Well, now you have to do all that, plus you have to be on every digital space that's out there. You have to, and no one picks up their phone. Believe me, I've made 30,000 phone calls. If I've talked to 1,000 people, 30,000 is a lot. And, you know, it's crazy the expense of running for Congress. So I don't know how to change the expense of it, but, you know, we certainly can change the disclosure. You know, what drives me crazy, and I'm a research hound, so I'll research who's actually funding it, are these ads when they'll be like, so it's not considered a political ad if someone says, is this politician really working for you? When they frame it in the form of a question, it is not considered political advertising.
Oh, geez.
So as long as they don't say vote for politician A or B, it's not political advertising. And I know this because I have filed numerous complaints with the state campaign finance people. And it's just really interesting to me. So we need to crack down and offer some clarification on that law. The other one that I'd really like to get rid of is the one where these kind of pseudo nonprofits are running ads in that, which it's okay for a nonprofit to advocate for an issue, but the way they have set some of this up is you can get that as a deductible contribution. Where political contributions are not tax deductible, this one variety of a setup, they can get 100% of that money deducted on their taxes. So, you know, billionaires like Betsy DeVos and the Koch brothers can put their money into these kind of issue organizations that run these ads that sound like a political ad, but they're technically not a political ad. And they got to deduct it off their tax return, where you and I, if we donate to a candidate, we don't get to deduct that off our tax return.
No, we do not.
So, anyway. I can talk taxes all night, guys. If anyone's trying to fall asleep, let me drone on there about a 10:40.
So, Diane, you said that you met your husband in college, you know. You know, without getting personal, I just want to ask, was it love at first sight, or, you know, were you like running away saying, go away?
It was love at first on guard. It was love at first on guard. No, we actually knew each other for about 6 months before we started dating. I did, of course, I hate to say it, I think I was at that age where every cute guy that walked in the room, I'd go, oh, you know, but, and no, so we started dating and that, and then, yeah, we got married almost exactly 2 years to our first date, so.
Oh,
and then
nice,
we left the
nice.
And then after, and then came back.
That's great. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, he's husband is a dean of science at Macomb Community College, and he serves on the board at the Sierra Club, and he used to be on the Clinton River Watershed Council. So, you know, he's been very active in the community and really helps inform all my information on climate change and that. So I've been hearing about that my entire adult life.
No, that's okay. That's good, though. That's
oh,
a very
wonderful.
Yeah, it's a positive thing. Absolutely.
and you're a financial planner for years now, but like when you're not at work, you know, what do you do for fun? You know, some people walk, some people play softball or soccer or basketball. Are you into any sports or ice hockey, baseball?
No, I'm not that exciting when it's my hobbies. I do play the piano. I was in a choir for a brief time, but I got laryngitis last year and lost my singing voice, which has been really sad. I actually love to eat at nice restaurants. So if I have any, like we usually go out once a week to someplace nice. And Detroit has become a worldwide mecca of dining, and I don't think people realize that we have become a worldwide. Yeah, so I enjoy sampling all the fantastic restaurants and that in the region. So that's one of my things. And just playing, I play euchre. You know, love to play euchre. I'm a true Michigander, full blooded, full box contact euchre. And then I don't play any ice hockey. I haven't played that since I was a kid. I did play it as a kid.
When I said not necessarily play the sport, but you know, do you enjoy the Detroit Red Wings? Are there? They're you know one of the big teams in the NHL.
Detroit Lions.
I didn't even want to watch the Super Bowl this year. I was so mad.
And, you know, I'm a person who loves underdog stories, you know, and, you know, people may not take you seriously. Oh, no, it's a woman. She's, you know, but I think you have the passion and enthusiasm and drive, you know, and, you know, with a crowded democratic feel and everything. And you, with your experience in being a financial advisor, come from a strong startup family. Kids are there and everything, you know. So, I mean,
you're gonna do it, Diane. That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was trying to think of like other things I do on my free time. I'm like, you know, I tend to be the person who raises their hand all the time. So, you know, like I'm on the board of the Warren Symphony. So, you know, we just celebrated our 50th anniversary, and I led the effort to do a black and white gala where everyone would wear black and white, and it turned out to be hugely successful. And you know, I just love doing things like that and raising money for different organizations. I've done high teas to support like Turning Point and Neighborhood House and stuff like that. So I love to do these kind of goofy things that are fun. And bring a community together and then help organizations in our area.
If someone wants to contribute to your campaign, do you have ECLU?
I do. If you go onto my website, DianeYoungForCongress.com, and just click on the donate, it goes right to an ECLU page. If they prefer the old-fashioned check, our address is on the website as well. I would appreciate any contributions. We just surpassed over 2,000 individual donations. So I have, of all the candidates in this primary, I do have the most individual donations towards the campaign. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that.
And then you have a fundraiser coming up on March, I think you said the 7th?
Yeah, I've won tomorrow if anyone's in Warren tomorrow. But, yeah, we'll be doing things throughout the you can sign up. If you sign up on my website, we'll add you to the email list and let you know. But we have one in Mount Clemens at the, you know, at the local Engine House there. It's a bar called the Engine House.
Yep.
And we'll be doing something in downtown Rochester on March 7th, 15th for kind of a St. Paddy's Day theme. And we'll be doing things throughout the area, some coffees and that. So it's a great opportunity for people to come out and meet me in person, ask those questions. You know, one thing I've learned, you know, that in this area especially, people like to shake hands with you and meet you person to person. And that's one of my biggest criticisms of John James is he's not willing to do that retail politics to come out and actually meet the people. And, you know, and take their questions even when they're tough, right? And people here want that. They'll respect you even if they don't agree with you if you have the courage of your convictions and are willing to meet them face to face.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it takes a lot of character to honestly, you know, speak to a person and answer questions and not be afraid to step on toes. You know what I'm saying? If they don't agree, that's, you know, that's a great asset for yourself. You know, it's a good asset for you. So keep doing that. People like that.
Mm-hmm,
and I think that you're going to do great, Diane. I really do. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And maybe in a couple months, if you want to, we can have you back on and you can tell us how your campaign is going. And you could just do a little segment and we'll, you know, we will, you know, advertise for you again, that sort of thing. And because we need a really good candidate to win in 10. I'm in 9. I don't have big hopes for 9, but at least if 10 would, you know, would become,
yeah,
have a
we don't take back the
house. I would feel much better.
Yeah, and you know, it is a winnable seat. It's it was the third closest race in the country in 2022.
Yep.
A lot of people don't realize how close it was. And
yep.
I think with the right candidate, we can take this house seat back and flip the house blue.
That time for another question.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Diane, are you going to have at least one mailing? Let me explain why I'm asking that question. I have friends that are internet savvy and social media savvy, but they also rely on at least one piece of mail at the house so they can sit there and study it. You can't study your phone. You can't study social media. I mean, sometimes the old-fashioned way is a good way. Are you going to have at least one mailing?
Yeah, no, my goal is to mail people at least 3 times. We're already reaching out to voters in the district currently. My volunteers are calling, and then we're mailing them a follow-up response to whatever their question or concern was. So I am a big believer in the traditional mail because it's become so old-fashioned, it's back in style because no one's mailed, so your postcard or whatever does stick out. So we are already doing voter outreach, even though we're months away from the primary. So it's very critical that they get to know me and feel comfortable with me. And in some parts of the district, I write a column for the local paper, and I've written a financial planning column for over 18 years. And so many people do know my name and that. So they're like, oh, it's you, you know. So,
good.
Yeah, no, my full intention is to mail at least 3 times to, you know, primary voters.
Okay, are you also door knocking?
Oh, my gosh, we will. Not right now. It's a little early.
I don't mean right now. It's kind of, it's been kind of,
oh, my
you know,
gosh, yeah.
Really,
we will be a very robust campaign to door knock, phone bank, digital, everything that I have to do to get that down. I'm an old dog at this. This is not my first rodeo as far as helping. I've worked on a lot of campaigns. I'm, you know, the vice chair of the Warren Sterling Heights STEM Club, and I founded the Women's Democratic Club of Rochester. So we know how to, you know, the work that has to be done. I went into this with my eyes wide open as to the amount of effort it was going to take to win this House seat. So I have a very robust campaign, and my team are real professionals. I think one of the mistakes many candidates make is hiring their friends or something like that to, you know, be their campaign manager or whatever. And, you know, I've brought on true professionals. I have an unbelievable finance director who there's some days I want to throw rocks at him if he's listening. Because he'll push me out of my comfort zone. He'll push you out of your comfort zone. And but I've grown a lot because of that. And, you know, as a true professional and as someone who's built a business, I know that, you know, again, heat and pressure make diamonds, so I have to go out of my comfort zone. I also know that these people know what they're doing, and I have to listen to them. And so I'm really proud of the team that we're putting together here. It's an amazing team. My media consultants and my polling consultants are national consultants. These are people who've worked on the presidential campaign, have elected Midwest women to Congress, you know, so they kind of know how to to work with me in that. They're quite mm-hmm. amazing people and such a resource to have, and I've had them on board since day one.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
that's awesome. Really good.
The very last question before we let you go, because you've been a trooper in this interview and all, and you answered mm-hmm. and never run away from any of the questions. So Naj in mm-hmm. Atlanta, Georgia, he asked, should Merrick Garland be fired for not taking up the Mueller investigation and not fully vetting the Republican smearing of Biden with Russian agents as a source?
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. I haven't really paid much attention to Merrick Garland's role in this.
Mm-hmm.
I've not been really that thrilled with his. I think what he's made the mistake of doing is trying to appear so nonpartisan that
mm-hmm.
he's gone too far the other way. It'll be up to, it's really up to the president who he wants on his team.
Mm-hmm.
Many times when you're, assuming our Biden gets reelected, this is usually a time when people will circle out of a role. So that'll be his decision to make. This whole thing with the bad data and that the Congress was basing their impeachment inquiry
mm-hmm.
on a Biden is just, again, it was them
mm-hmm.
jumping the gun, taking the bait, and not stepping back, saying the research, going, is this really credible? Does this sound plausible? And
mm-hmm.
it didn't. And I hate to say this, back when the initial inquiry on Trump was going on, if you recall, and we go back when that happened, there were many
mm-hmm.
Democrats who said, we don't want to go down this road because we don't want to turn
mm-hmm.
it into a circus, because they weren't,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't believe that the information that they were starting to hear was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only
mm-hmm.
until the evidence was really brought forth, solid evidence of
mm-hmm.
all the wrongdoings, that they went forward with the impeachment, where the Republicans just jumped on it right away and, like, all of them voted. There wasn't any dissent. It's like, yeah. I always say that if I'm in a partnership with a couple people in that and we all agree, then two of us aren't needed. So I don't mind disagreeing, because that's healthy. And we need to
mm-hmm.
Bring back that respectable way of having disagreements on issues and discussing things and that. So that's what I'd like to see. It'll be totally up to the president whether or not he would like Merrick Garland to continue on in his role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Diane, thank you so much for coming on tonight and everything. It was a pleasure speaking with you. And we look forward to hearing more from the campaign as it goes
mm-hmm.
by and everything, and hopefully you get the nomination to challenge and unseat John James. John James, a congressman in District 10 currently, he is a Trump yes man, a rubber stamp. And lastly, congressional District 10 need in Michigan is a rubber stamp. They want real leadership, honest leadership, open leadership, somebody who lives within the district, who's not a carpetbagger.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck to your campaign and everything. And one more time, www.dianeyoungforcongress.com is the website. Go up there, volunteer, donate money, donate your time for phone banking and going door to door and giving out literature, because Diane is going to win. I just have it, feel it in my bones that Diane Young will make an excellent congresswoman.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, Diane, it was a pleasure this evening. I loved all the answers to your questions, and I hope to see you in a couple weeks. I'm going to try to make it out to the engine house in Mount Clemens, and we'll be talking to you soon, and we wish
mm-hmm.
you the best of luck. And like I said, I hope you come back and, a couple months if you have the time, and just spend a half hour or whatever, update us, and, we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much,
yes,
Diane.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Okay. So, great show by everybody. I was hoping more questions would come, but I guess people shy. Diane Young. She's a financial planner for years now, met her husband
mm-hmm.
in college, love at first sight, got married in a couple of years, have kids,
mm-hmm.
and she's known and well-respected in the community she's running in, And she's a lifelong Michigander. And, you know, people, once they feel comfortable with you, then, you know you're in. And, you know, Dan, I feel she's going to win this nomination and give John James a run for his money and beat him. Because the mood in the country is that of, you know, the whole toxicity is not caused by Democrats. It's caused by Republicans.
Yes.
And, you know, if you follow Trump, then it's going to backfire eventually because, you know, 200,000 people have stopped donating to his campaign, the small donors and everything. So he's crashing and burning. And so John James holding on to his coattails, it's going to backfire eventually on John James. But a strong candidate like Diane Young, articulate, intelligent, well-educated, financial planner, you know, good, strong family life, people not really have a choice but to back her. She's a good person. She's a decent, honest human being. And, you know, I love the underdog story because, you know, John James think, you know, throwing money at things will win him. But the people of Congressional District 10 are not for sale, you know, and America is not for sale. So when you go to the polling booth for the Democratic primary, I hope you vote for Diane Young for Congress. And when election day come, you know, we'll vote collectively. Grab a neighbor, grab a friend, grab 10 of them, carpool. Go vote for Diane Young because we need good people, people with integrity and honesty to be in the United States Congress. Not the Lauren Boberts of this world or Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, you know, worse than Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. You think Michelle Bachmann was bad? Oh, my God. These current crop of Republicans in there, you know, suck. They suck so bad. They should be assets to Russia. You know, Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, you know, who bragging on the House floor that he had relations with underage girls and showing videos and everything. You know, it's unbecoming of a congressperson, you know? And you will have to worry about Diane Young acting like a scumbag, like, you know, Matt Gaetz or whomever, you know, just fill in the name in there because there's so much scumbags in the Republican Party, you know? It's ridiculous. You know, the liar, they're liars. They're trying to, you know, suppress votes and everything. Diana Young, or Diane Young and Democrats are not for suppressing votes. You know, they want you to come out there and exercise your right as an American citizen to come out there and vote. You know, so Diane Young, I like the I like it. Congresswoman Diane Young, 10th Congressional District, Michigan. I can see it now. You know, she on CNN, MSNBC, whomever. Even idiot Fox News. She's not even a news organization. You know, because she jump in the lion's den and take on Fox News. Because, see, she know what she's about. She know what, you know, her people want in the congressional district. And she got her head strong with a level head and say, here what, you know, this is who I represent. This is what I stand for. And that's why you should vote for me. So I digress.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's a fabulous candidate. I think she would be an asset to that District 10. I think she'd be an asset in D.C. We need people that have experience, have integrity, have empathy, you know, it just, you know, we don't need what we have right now. What we have right now is a mess. And
hot garbage.
Yes, they need to clean house. And I think we're going to do that. I have this feeling that we're going to have a blue wave. Republicans are just messing themselves up so bad, and they just don't even realize that they're going down, you know, this. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but what Alabama did in vitro fertilization, I mean, they just picked another, you know, bad apple because there are a lot of angry people right now. So let them keep doing what they're doing, and, you know, Democrats will take over, and we will, and we will, you know, we'll win, and, you know, we'll set the country straight. That's what we need.
Yes. I want to thank Susie and Elaine and Doris, mm-hmm. and what's his name, Eric, for calling in from Michigan, and Naj in Atlanta, Georgia, for his question, and also Aaron in Ohio, and who else am I forgetting?
Not sure.
Oh, from Alabama. Wolf from Alabama with his question. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening.
We're
on kitchenpockets123.com. We'll have great recipes up there, more coming. And we're also here on every Sunday, Monday, and Thursday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. So until Sunday, same time, same place again on Block Talk Radio. This has been Kitchen Politics 123 for Thursday, February 22nd. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, David. This is Lori Picka from Michigan. And everyone have a good evening, and we'll see you Sunday. Bye now. Thank you.
Thank you.